Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, man. There you go. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, The Mullet, Adam O'Brien. And here on the network, we have the flagship show here, of course, the Lethal Mullet Podcast. And tonight, we're going to be chatting about a Western from the 1980s, which is part science fiction, part post-apocalyptic, mythic fiction. It's also a little bit of a Western. And samurai Western is probably the best way to describe it. It stars, of course, Patrick Swayze as the Yojimbo-like hero of the story, and where he's got to look after a band of people in a village looking after their water supply as desert raiders come along and try and literally rip everything out from under them. This is a great little flick which has almost a ninja flavor to it, which was, I think, something they were playing on, and you can see that even in one of the weapons that Patrick carries in this. This is by no means the greatest film ever made, but it's certainly an interesting one, and recently grabbing the Blu-ray edition of it, it was great to sort of revisit the film and just see what it was like now. What is it? How does it stand up in the piece, of where it was? I've got to say that it even felt dated in the 1980s when it came out, because we'd had all the ninja pictures by then, you know, Shokosugi, his ninja flicks. We had all the, obviously, the American Ninja, all the Hong Kong ones. And, of course, this was, you know, an American actor on the up-and-coming and doing a Western with science fiction as well. So it's an interesting connotation. I do like the movie, and we're going to get into some of that tonight. What worked, what's dated it, what hasn't. Let's look at the cast, and we'll talk about some of the fight scenes all here on the podcast tonight. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shea Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening. You know you got to listen to that little sound. It comes on. He got a big, long, blown money, and he watches VHS. You know you want the sound. And now, it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Right, some brief news, folks. I've been getting into some pretty damn decent films when it comes to Liam Neeson. You know, he just puts out these films which are basically Taken films, folks. I mean, we know what he's doing. He's basically doing that sort of action film now, you know, or that sort of action thriller. So I've been watching a fair bit of that too. I looked at Jackie Chan's Vanguard, which I'm going to be doing an episode on because it's one of his most recent and certainly getting back to a police story feel. And I do believe it may even be part of the police story franchise, which seems to always generate new characters when it comes to Jackie returning. So we'll be looking at that. We're also going to be looking at very soon something that I enjoyed a really, really good rewatch of. Now, some of these films that I've been rewatching lately, I haven't seen in very, very long time. One of them is, of course, Stone Cold. And we're going to be looking at that. Of course, one of the bad guys in that is, of course, Lance Henriksen. Yes, Lance Henriksen playing a bikie. And a pretty tough bikie at that, too. So we're going to be looking at that in the next couple of episodes, too. As we sort of steer into, obviously, the meat and potatoes of 2022, you know, things are getting more and more interesting. So stay tuned.
Oi, how's your man?
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
Make sure you're leaving your bags and your shoes outside the door, folks, because it's time to train. In the dojo tonight, I'm going to be chatting about something that's just picked up literally out of the post box, and it's quite a large little package. I was like, ooh, it's little, but it's large and it's long. But blunt, folks, because this is a training blade. This is, of course, the Kukri, which is, of course, the weapon of the Gurkha soldier. And what an amazing weapon it is. It's very different sort of blade. We've seen these used in movies, and obviously the Gurkha soldiers use these. They're amazing weapons, which are basically a long machete, if you like, but it's given a very fat and very sharp edge at the front, which actually moves on an incline away from the blade and out towards basically wherever you're cutting. These are great survival blades, great for debarking trees, all that sort of stuff for clearing, using as a machete. But one of the most formidable things is just how they're used in combat as well. It's not like a normal knife, you know, you have to wield it a different way. Many of my senseis over the years have sort of said, you know, you want a bit of a challenge and something a bit different, you should always look at training with a Kukri. The Kukri knife itself is an elegant design. Certainly has kind of a right angle if you look at the way that things are shot off to the side where the blade moves away from its traditional design. But it literally cuts through the air quite remarkably. A little bit like the katana and other weapons that are curved, this one's curved forward. And the weight is in that blade at the front. So you kind of, that weight weighs it down when you're striking, which makes it fast. So anyone that's trained with knives before particularly, or any small sword or gladius or something like that, will get the same feel. It really is one that sort of becomes one with your strike, like any weapon truly should be. But I will keep tabs here and let you guys know exactly what I think of using the Kukri. It's something that I'm completely new to. And, of course, my experience with other blades is the only thing that's informing that training. Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah, man, it's been real busy, D, you know? Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. And enjoy the show, films and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
Well, here we go, folks. Here we're chatting about Steel Dawn, which is a bit of an older movie. It's certainly one that, you know, stands the test of time as it's a bit of a Western. And, you know, before we get into this, I have a good mate of mine all the way from Scotland by the name of Alan, who, bit of a Patrick Swayze fan, aren't you, Alan? Mate, how are you?
Hi, how you doing, mate? You right?
I'm doing really good, buddy. And it's good to see that you've come on to chat about, obviously, Patrick's great sci-fi movie.
Aye, it's a wee bit of pleasure, you know. Oh, you know, from Aberdeen. We watching this film on VHS. It's great as it is.
Yeah, it's a great film. I mean, it really feels like it's a bit of a Dollars Trilogy film. I mean, Clint Eastwood could have scrapped on a sword, couldn't he?
Oh, come on now. Eastwood would not what end of a sword to use like this.
Well, true, but, you know, I think the big thing is Patrick came in and he's got the career of a dancer before this, obviously.
It's not like he was drinking and dancing in Roodhouse.
Well, true. Well, how many stars do you give this film? Obviously, we've got the Hallenbeck scale.
Aye, I give it a whopping big 5.
Well, maybe it's out of 50 this time.
Well, body gets 50. 50.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
Here we are in the cafe, folks, about to chat about, of course, Steel Dawn proper. And what a film, folks. It's a Western, it's a samurai film, it's a fantasy film, it's everything. This is a great cast too, folks. We have Patrick as playing Nomad. We've got Lisa Nimi playing Kasha. Brett Hull playing Jux. We've got Brian James playing Tark. Good old Brian James. You always seen him in so many movies back in the day. Anthony Zerb, of course, from all the way back in the Omega Man days, is the villain. Up until now, look at him. He's in everything. The Matrix, the works. And he plays Damnall. Damnall's enforcer, played by Christopher Neame, plays Shoal. I wonder if that was, like, you know, aimed to be taken on, of course, the name of maybe Shokosugi, maybe, as a villain. Christopher Neame, of course, was in Doctor Who. And might just have been in Shada. That's right. Dan Hadley's told us all about that on, of course, Type 40. A Doctor Who podcast. And, of course, Type 40, we had, of course, Dan on a few times. And we talked about Shada because we're going to do Shada specials. That's right. We did do a Shada special. It is my favorite. And, of course, it has Tom Baker. I want to actually see Tom Baker do an action film. Can you imagine that? Tom Baker, I have my cardigan. I have my jacket. Now I have a 45 and a Tommy gun. And look out, if you're a Dalek, you'll die. Yes, he would be pretty damn funny because I reckon he could actually hold a good little punch there too. We got John Fujioka. Yes, the sensei or the shudoshi from, of course, American Ninja. The one who trained... That's right, trained Michael Dudikoff's character, Joe.
I know her to be a ninja, and I was trained by John Fujioka.
Who plays in this chord? Who's the mentor and friend, of course, to Nomad, played by, of course, the one, the only, Patrick Swayze. That's right. And we also have Arnold Vosloo, plays Maker in this. And yeah, Vosloo is in this because of where they shot the film, folks. That's right, in South Africa, which we'll talk about very soon. Well, thereabouts in Africa anyway. We have Marcel Van Hinden playing Lan. We have James Weil playing Tui. Russell Savadia playing Off. And Tulio Manita playing the henchman. And yeah, it's quite a good cast, folks, I've got to say. Not the biggest cast in the world, but it certainly is good. So what's the movie all about? Well, simply post-World War III. All right, so it's been big fallout, like Mad Max. A bit of fallout there, folks. Fallout's going around the place, knock things around, you know. It's happened in a number of these post-apocalyptic movies, folks. And it's happened in this one. And, of course, what happens is a swordsman by the name of Nomad defends a desert widow, played by Lisa Nimi, and her water treatment farm. Yes, it's a desert, so that, of course, makes water. You think about it, folks. What is water in the desert? It is like diamonds, folks. It is the jewel of the desert. To stay alive and to drink water is the way of the game. And the name of the game is survival. And yes, in this, that's exactly what they do. Director, of course, is Lance Hull. And music was composed by Brian May. Now, would that be the Brian May that we know? Or the Brian May from Australia that did the Mad Max soundtrack, folks? That's right, that ripping soundtrack from Mad Max. No, it's actually Brian May from, of course, Queen, the guitarist and
Dead set, absolute legend when it comes to movies. All right. So when this movie came out in 1987. I saw it on VHS. Never got to see it in the cinemas. It was pretty much a VHS release out here from what I remember. It being on VHS for a while when I saw it. And, you know, I knew Patrick from Dirty Dancing. I mean, you know, I didn't think he was going to be some action guy, particularly a ninja, which is pretty much what they, you know, this film was meant to be. It was this samurai sort of ninja film, you know, in the West. So directed by Lance Hill, the working title of the film was Desert Warrior. Well, that's apt, isn't it? You know, but A Steel Dawn, it's a little bit different, you know. And obviously it's science fiction and Western. I do believe martial arts to a certain extent too, you know. So it's got the ethos of the samurai film, you know. So let's have a look at it. Written by Doug Leffler, Conrad Hull, Edgar Bold, and Lance Hull produced it. We talked about the stars. It was photographed by George Toole, and he was the cinematography for that one. Mark Conti was the editor, and it was distributed by Vestron Incorporated. Came out on November 6, 1987. And it's bang on 90 minutes, folks. That's what films were like back then. They were 90 minutes long, you know. And it's a lot longer, but that's definitely the one. It was the $3.5 million budget and only made $560,000 back. So it's not a success to a certain extent. Let's put it that way. But we're going to get into a bit of the story. So let's talk about this. So Nomad is a swordsman, pretty much a samurai-like ninja figure. And he's wandering through the desert. And, you know, a little bit like Mad Max, he goes from one town to the next. And I think obviously finds, you know, a little bit of work. It's enough to eat, survive on for a little bit, and then moves on. He's a nomad. So he searches for his mentor's killer, the assassin Sho, played by Christopher Neame from Shudder. That's right, from Shudder. And, of course, you know, he has a flashback when we get to see him talking to John Fujioka's mentor character in this as well. And we get to see, you know, who's done the killing and all that sort of stuff. There's a great opening where we get to see the Nomad take on these creatures, if you like. And these probably mutants or something like that out in the desert who literally jump out of the desert, a little bit like the Fremen in Dune. I wonder where they got the idea for that one, folks. but they literally jump out of the ground, attack him, and pretty much take everything they can. But, of course, we get to see Patrick Springer in action now from a headstand he's doing, where he's, I don't know who would do a headstand and then go into a trance or in this case meditate, but he's in a meditative place where he's literally upside down. Looks like Luke Skywalker in, what was it, Empire Strikes Back doing that stuff? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so he's doing that, and of course then he breaks into an action sequence where he takes them all on before cracking out the sword, and it's a really interesting sword, which we're going to talk about soon. But then goes into full scene, and now I have a few qualms about that fight scene. It's quite good, and some, you know, nice basic sword work in it. But then Patrick goes into a little bit of tumbling that doesn't need to be done. Tumbling for tumbling's sake. It almost looked like somebody from, you know, Cirque du Soleil was literally jumping around in his costume around anybody who's fighting. That was just like, it was out of place. Didn't work. But I think it was to try and make it a bit more exciting. That part didn't hold up so well, put it that way. Okay, so Nomad's family were killed, and he's and this really rides him. Basically, it's something that always continues to torture him. So like Mad Max, he's gone through those same sort of classic Western tropes. From here, he encounters a group of settlers in the town of Meridian. And the Meridian, Damnell, played by Anthony Zerbe, is basically the person that owns the land there. And his gang are the ones that are attacking everywhere, trying to get basically the monopoly on the water supply in the town, right? Because water is the main thing there. But the local farm there, water farm, is owned by the widow, Kasha, played by Lisa Neame. Kasha is pretty much one who runs the farm, runs the town. She's got a small amount of workers there, but she's also got a pretty tough foreman by the name of Tark, played by Brian James. The amazing Brian James, folks. You know, the late Brian James is just one of my favorite actors.
She has a son called Jux who quickly endears himself basically to Nomad. And from here, Kasha, you know, says that there's, you know, there's a real source of the water there, and it's pure water. And it's a spring under the ground that actually runs through the whole valley itself. So she knows where to find the real thing. So from here, Nomad joins Tark and to oppose basically Damnall and the bullying tactics they're doing. So from here, they find out that basically here's one of these swordsmen that goes around and, you know, does everything. From here, led by, of course, Damnall's group, show up in the town and start to cause havoc for Nomad. And basically from here, they have a massive star fight. And it's quite good. It's actually a good action set piece. Just feels like a classic martial arts one. You know, one of those karate ones, the kabuto, whatever you want to call it. From here, Jux is kidnapped by Damnall's men, and of course, Nomad then plans to rescue him as well. From here, he's also locked in a safe with his sword by Kasha, so that nothing will happen. Of course, from here, he's going to break free and, of course, get there. And of course, there's a great classic Western ending. It's very much like Shane's story, you know, where Nomad basically comes in time and then has a big showdown with Sho, a final battle, which is actually pretty damn good. For two guys that really, from what I see of it, don't have any martial arts experience whatsoever, it's a pretty good fight. I'm sure there's some stand-ins here and there, but most of it looks pretty damn good. The blade work, for what it is pretty good. And then, of course, the valley begins Kasha's irrigation area after that. And, of course, Nomad takes off and lives up to his character, which is really interesting. So, this film was actually shot in Namibia. Now, that name might be familiar to all of you Australians out there and, of course, fans of the Mad Max franchise because in and around those surrounds, Fury Road was shot. So some of the sands and stuff like that definitely looks like, of course, the wilds of the wasteland of Mad Max, and it's quite an interesting one. So how did it fare? How did this film go? Let's have a look at it. So Steel Dawn premiered on 290 screens in 1987 in the US. Grossed about $311,000 on its opening weekend, but made only about $560,000. And of course, on a $3.5 million budget. It's about 24 out of 100 based on four critics, indicating that basically it's a favorable film on Metacritic. And also the New York Times noted that it's very, very closely follows the plot of the 1953 film Shane, of course. And that's true. You know, it really is. On film.com, Eric D. Snyder said that it was a very simple plot. So the only way to stretch the material into 90 minutes is spend some time with the characters and watch them inhabit their strange futuristic world. That's a good point. That's honestly, the film itself is exactly that. You look at it, that's, you know, there's action beats that need to be met for that sort of film, but it does have some good character points and character beats building up those characters, whether it's Damnall, Kasha, Jux, or even Tark as well. Tark gets quite a bit of a thing too. On IMDb, currently has a 5.2 out of 10 stars as well, which is really interesting. And it holds about a 35% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Yes, that website, folks, Rotten Tomatoes. Not a huge fan of it, but it holds sway. I'm going to give him that. So let's have a look at some of the actors that we don't know so well. Christopher Neen, you know, who plays Sho. So not a huge amount of material on him, but we'll have a look at some of the work he's done. So he's 74 years old currently, born in London in 1947, and he's an English actor that's now living in the US. Let's have a look at his characters. A lot of Hammer horror film credits, Lust for a Vampire, Dracula AD, this is back in 1972, and No Blade of Grass. He's known for appearing in The Rival of Sherlock Holmes. He played Kaiser William II in ITV's Edward VII. He was also in Secret Army and became one of the first male actors to appear nude on the small screen. And, of course, he played Scargrow in Shudder. That's right, in 1979. Folks, let's say it again. You ready? One, two, three. Shudder. There you go. And, of course, he was in The Cleopatras as well in 1983. He played Mark Antony. And he produced some episodes of the 1990 drama series called Soldier, Soldier as well. In his US career, though, a little bit different. He was in the following films. Now, Steel Dawn being one, DOA, that's Dead on Arrival, back in 1988, Bloodstone, License to Kill in 89. Ooh, you have to watch that to see him in that too. Interesting. Ghostbusters 2,
I remember him in that, actually. The Prestige, he's in that one. Ground Zero. Oh, my favorite, folks. Here we go. Suburban Commando. It's Shep Ramsey. He was in TV. He was in MacGyver, The Great Escape 2, Star Trek Enterprise in 04. He was in Babylon 5 as well. Blake 7, Star Trek, obviously Earth 2 as well. He was in Street Night. Now, that's interesting. In the film Street Night. Now, I do wonder if that is the Street Night we're thinking of. Yes, the Jeff Speakman film, folks. Street Night. Yes, there you go. He was also in the live-action cutscenes of Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2 in 1997. There you go. That's your villain. And your main villain is, of course, Anthony Zerbe. Anthony Jared Zerbe, born in 1936, obviously known as Matthias in The Omega Man. You know, it's one of the first films I saw him in. It's a film I'd seen for years where you see little bits and pieces pop up here and there and you're kind of like, oh, yeah, okay. And it pops up. And, of course, that was a legendary adaptation of Richard Matheson's 1954 novel, I Am Legend. He was also in one of the Molly Maguires, in the Molly Maguires film, also in Farewell, My Lovely Papillon. He was also in License to Kill. Hey, there you go. They were both in License to Kill. Now, isn't that something? We also have The Dead Zone and Star Trek The Insurrection. He was in that one as well. And, of course, he played Counselor Heyman in, of course, The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. You know, he's definitely one that's been around for quite some time, too. He's married to Annette Jens and sister of actress Salome Jens as well. There you go. So, very interesting. So, with that, too, we also have Lisa Nimi, who is, of course, Lisa Nimi Swayze. She's the wife and, of course, widow of the actor Patrick Swayze. She was a choreographer, dancer, and writer as well. She was born in 1956, and her education is through the Houston Ballet Dance Company. Now, what's interesting, too, is that through her life, obviously, she was a, I think both of them, Patrick and Lisa, very, very active people. I think it's one of the interesting things in watching the I Am Patrick Swayze documentary, which I did. And, you know, he's a dancer himself, so you can see one of the reasons that they obviously had a kindred spirit with too. So in the 1970s, Nimi and her husband pursued dance careers in New York City. She wrote, directed, and starred in the 2003 film One Last Dance. And was based on Without a Word, a successful play written many years before, which had won 6 Drama Critics Awards as well. She co-starred in Steel Dawn with Swayze, of course. And Beat Angel as well. Letters from a Killer, Next of Kin, Younger and Younger, Live from Death Row, She's Having a Baby, and Slam Dance. Nimi directed Dance, a 1990 film as well. And of course, one of the great things too with Patrick is that, you know, having, I think, that kindred spirit in dance and stuff like that, they, you know, everything they did was extremely physical in film and stuff like that, I think, too. You know, not just being actors and stuff like that, but you know, you're, as a dancer, you're communicating the story through physical motion and stuff like that too, which makes it very, very interesting. At the age 14, at the Houston Ballet Dance Company, Nimi met the owner and director's son, which is, of course, Patrick Swayze. And, of course, eventually got married when she was 19 years old. And they were married in 1975 and remained married right up to, of course, Swayze's death from, sadly, pancreatic cancer in 2009. It's sad. Patrick went way too young. But it's a sad fact that cancer is a real enemy to humankind, no matter what. I mean, it's hit my family too. I know it's like it's horrible. So it's very, very sad. But again, it's great to see that these two had a wonderful life in between that too, of course, which makes it interesting. But she's really good in this film and their character, and there's, you know, real strength to everything that she does in it too. What I love about this film, when we get down to it, is the fact that it is a Western, but it's also got touches of ninja film in some ways about it. One of those being the sword that he carries, and it's something that John Fugioka carries as well.
These swords are mimicked off the straight sort of blade of a ninja weapon, and definitely the two hands handle of it. So basically, it's quite a big grip on it, but also it's a blade that is kind of triangular in the way it's cut out. It's got also a number of series of circular holes all the way through it, I think to make it faster in speed and stuff like that too. There's also sharp edging on it as well. It does look futuristic, but it looks like a futuristic katana. That's what I think really falls back to the fact that this may be a swordsman film, but it is an ode to both Shane and to classic films like Yojimbo and stuff like that too. So where does this film sit on, of course, the Hallenbach scale? Well, folks, this was quite a, you know, particularly an enjoyable watch for me. You know, all I'd seen for years was the, obviously the Blu-rays hadn't come out at this stage. So it was on VHS for years, and then I saw a VHS copy of it on DVD, and then eventually I saw a DVD copy, which I've picked up recently. But then I was lucky enough on Amazon to actually see the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray is quite an amazing thing. You got quite a bit of background. It is not an Australian release, so if you're watching it out here, you need a free region Blu-ray player. So I suggest you get one of those. You can find them at Big W anywhere, and of course you can watch that on free region. But I suggest checking it out. It's cleaned up somewhat, but it's still an amazing film. Yes, it's dated, but it is what it is from the 80s and 87. It's a solid 4 out of 5 here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you next week on the show.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. Endzone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good